This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
This week on Witness History. In 2011, Japanese tidying expert Marie Kondo released her debut book and became an organising icon around the world. Her method focuses on only keeping items that spark joy and speak to your heart. Now a best-selling author, award nominee and household name, she tells us how she's a little more relaxed about tidying since having children. Search and subscribe to Witness History wherever you get your podcasts.
Come with me to a special place. A haven. An oasis of calm. Turn off your lights, step outside, and look up. Tonight I'm doing what humans have done since we first walked the planet. Gaze up in wonder at the vast celestial darkness that is the sky at night. It's the place I am most at peace, standing under a star-filled night sky. There's nothing quite like it.
I'm driving on the Trans-Canada Highway through Banff National Park. I'm heading to Bow Lake, which is on the Icefields Parkway, and that's one of the most beautiful drives in the world. Bow Lake is about 2.5 hours from Calgary. That's the closest major city to it. I'm driving in the darkness. It's about 9:45 p.m. I am driving there to do some night photography. I'm hoping to catch Orion rising above the mountains that are surrounding the lake.
Welcome to the documentary on the BBC World Service. My name is Monica Deviat, and I'm an astrophotographer, someone who takes pictures of space.
I'm going to get my gear out from the trunk of my car. Getting my tripod and my backpack full of gear. I have some winter rubber boots that are really good for this location because I can step into water and they keep my feet warm. I'm walking along the shoreline now, looking for a good spot to set up. Tonight I brought some hot tea, some cookies, I have a first aid kit, I have an in-reach satellite device, so just in case anything happens I can call out or someone can track me. We are in an area with no cell reception, so I can't use my phone. I have my bear spray with me. There are still bears around. We've actually had reports of some near Banff and Canmore. There's nobody else here tonight, just me. And this is actually how I prefer it. There won't be any other lights. No other humans. Maybe some wildlife, we'll see. I just set up my tripod and I'm going to put my star tracker together. Tonight I'm trying to capture Orion above Crowfoot Mountain. It's a little windier than I would like for astrophotography, but it's still a beautiful night. The stars are shining. It's relatively warm for November, so that's kind of nice. It's probably one of the few times my brain really gets quiet as well. I don't really worry. I don't really stress. I'm not ruminating. I'm just enjoying what I can see.
Life on Earth is intrinsically connected to the night sky. It's been our calendar, our navigation system, and our weather forecaster. But that connection is in danger of being disrupted. In the last century, more than at any other time in human existence, we have irrevocably changed the night sky. In amongst the stars and planets, there's a web of flashing airplanes and bright white satellites visible to anyone who looks up at night. And that's even if you can see anything at all. The glow from artificial light, from streetlights, car headlamps, and building lights, often masks the stars and other celestial objects completely. We're changing a sky that all of life on Earth has evolved with for tens of thousands of years. What goes on up there affects what happens down here, And I'm not sure we understand how much we've already lost, and what more we're in danger of losing. The night sky is our window into space. We should be able to look up and see out into the universe that our planet is just one tiny part of.
We live in a galaxy. We live in a huge group of stars called the Milky Way. And our galaxy is flat, like a giant starry omelette. And it has a beautiful spiral structure.
Radmila Topalovic is an astronomer and math teacher at Morley College in London.
Our galaxy is not the only galaxy in the universe. It's thought that there might be up to trillions of other galaxies. I can't quite believe that.
Up there in the night sky is where we all came from, where it all began.
Our sun would have formed in a group of stars, and those stars have moved around the galaxy. And so here we are with one star, and thankfully planets. Eight planets, plus dwarf planets, plus comets, plus asteroids, moons, and who knows what else. And the elements, the building blocks of all of that came from our ancestor stars, came from our grandparent stars. Amazing. So absolutely, we are made of the ashes, the dust, the debris of the stars that were here many, many, many years before we existed.
It's 11:30 and Orion is rising above the mountain ranges. Above Orion is Jupiter, which shines really brightly. I can also see the Pleiades constellation, and soon Sirius, the brightest star in the night sky, will also be above the mountains. Behind me and my camera is the Big Dipper and the Little Dipper, which a lot of people can spot quite easily in the night sky. I can also see a part of the winter Milky Way rising along with Orion.
Bow Lake has nearly perfect dark skies, but even here, it's not just stars and planets that I can see. I often see the flashing lights of an airplane, which then shows as a train of red dots in my pictures. Or all of a sudden, I'll notice that one of the bright dots I've been looking at is moving. It's not a star at all. It's a satellite. It's as if these days, satellites make up a new constellation in the night sky. One entirely human-made.
A satellite is something that orbits the Earth. Our natural satellite is the Moon. And then, currently, there are around 10,000 of these artificial satellites. And they have a wide range of uses. So there might be weather satellites that are keeping an eye on the weather or tracking the effects of climate change. You might have satellites that form part of the military, because often that's shrouded in secrecy, but it's there for our, supposedly for our security, for our safety. And also, I should say, GPS, geopositional satellites. They're super important as well for determining our locations. And you have satellites that help with Wi-Fi coverage, like the Starlink satellites.
The Starlink satellites belong to SpaceX, the private space company owned by Elon Musk. Because these satellites have a low Earth orbit, they're clearly visible to the naked eye. SpaceX has by far the most satellites orbiting the Earth. In late 2018, around 2,000 active satellites circled Earth. That number has nearly doubled in the past 2 years with SpaceX launches alone. One estimate suggests there are over 6,000 Starlink satellites currently up in space. Bow Lake is where I first saw the Starlink train. I was photographing the Milky Way, and out of the corner of my eye, I spotted the string of bright white dots moving behind me.
It's quite frustrating for astronomers because now we have even more bright dots, which have got nothing to do with the cosmos, but are up there and maybe masking some of the cosmic objects that we might want to look at. And we're not including there space debris. So decommissioned satellites, satellites that have served their purpose and are still up there in the graveyard orbit. And all of that space debris can also lead to that sky glow that makes it really difficult to see the fainter objects in space.
Satellites move slowly and steadily through the night sky, and in my pictures, they turn out as white streaks. It's not just my photos that are affected. Low-orbiting satellites, like the Starlink train, leave bright streaks across the images captured by optical telescopes, too. Radiation from satellites is also interfering with radio telescopes, blocking them from seeing some of the earliest galaxies. I know satellites are useful. I use them often. I use GPS when I'm driving, and even my cameras have GPS in them. I have my inReach satellite device in case I need to send out an SOS, but with the number of satellites expected to surpass 100,000 by 2030, the question around global regulation is becoming more pressing. At the moment, there's very sparse regulation on satellites and their effect on the night sky and astronomy. We did reach out to SpaceX, but we didn't hear back from them.
Our ancestors, they knew they were at the mercy of nature, right? When we look up at the sky, we are using that sky to determine what time of year it is, to determine roughly what time of day it is, which season we're in, when should we grow our crops, when should we reap the harvest, you know, bring all of that food in and store it, and is there a drought coming? And so they were scrutinizing the sky because their well-being, their livelihood, their lives depended on that sky.
If satellites continue to intrude on our window into the universe and we lose the night sky, our connection to the origins of life on Earth could be lost. This is felt keenly in cultures for whom the night sky has been pivotal, like the First Nations people of Australia, who have been studying and using the night sky for tens of thousands of years.
My name is Gillard. That's my tribal name that was given to me at birth by my grandfather. I was born in a little country town called Brewarrina.
Gillard is an astronomy professor and of the Ualiai and Gomeroi Nations. The Ualiai Nation's lands are in the far northwest of what is now known as the state of New South Wales and overlapping the border into Queensland. Gillard recorded this interview in the Wiradjuri Nation on the land of the Tubbaga people in Dubbo, Australia.
Well, we lived in camps, in tin shacks, on the riverbank at Gadooga when I was a little fellow. We always lived under open skies. We had beds out on the flat where we could just lay back and look at the stars and the sky. So you woke up with a magnificent view of the universe, and you just couldn't help but learn.
In Aboriginal astronomy, the night sky is reflected in people and places on Earth, and vice versa. It's as if the night sky and the Earth mirror each other.
When we look at those different constellations up there, we talk about where people live, where camps are. The Milky Way, of course, we call it the Big Warrumburra, and Warrumburra means big river in the sky. Along there, we see places where the old camps used to be, so we can tell you where people used to live, where different tribes lived, different clans lived, etc.
The stories of the constellations are also indicators of resources, like the story of the emu in the sky. The emu is a flightless bird, endemic to Australia.
We see her taking form around about February, March. She starts to become very visible in the sky.
The shape of an emu begins to take form in the dark clouds of the Milky Way. The celestial emu's position in the sky changes as the year progresses, signaling to the people on Earth when the emu is mating and when the best time is to go out and collect her eggs.
Once we see the legs starting to protrude, that's when we know she's walking around mating. She's looking for a mate. And then around about May, June, the legs will begin to disappear. And once those legs disappear, that's when we say that she's now ready to sit and lay the eggs. Then when the neck begins to fade and there's a disconnection between the cul-de-sac that they call the head and then the body, we say then that those eggs are not necessarily good to go and get, because when that neck disappears, that's when the blood is starting to form. The chicks are starting to form inside the egg. So we discourage people from going out after that. And that's normally about end of July, August.
The relationship that Aboriginal groups like the Ualiai have to the landscape around them, including the night sky, ensured their survival for thousands of years. When the British came in the 18th century and brutally colonized what then became known as Australia, that relationship was disturbed.
Back when I was growing up, this was a time when everything started to die. A lot of the knowledge was disappearing, the language was disappearing as well. And they always made sure that there was one or two persons who always had all the knowledge, and they passed that on. I guess I'm one of the fortunate ones to have benefited from that. Our cultural norms have been interrupted quite significantly, and I think that there needs to be an international forum to talk about First Nations people's way of life and our association with the natural world, so that we can tell the Western world that this is how we survived, this is how we made it. And we didn't warm the earth, we lived with the earth, we lived with it.
The night sky can feel distant, impenetrable and unknowable to many of us, especially the millions of us living in urban environments where light pollution clouds out the stars. Most of us will never travel to space or launch anything up there. And many things that the night sky once informed us of, satellites do that job today. But as someone who has now spent many hours standing in the darkness and looking up, I know that there is a profound difference between checking an app on your phone to see if it's going to rain and using the stars to do that, or using your phone to locate yourself and using the stars to do that. Our deep connection to nature is more important than ever, and protection of the night sky is so rarely part of that consideration. This is The Documentary from the BBC World Service. I'm Monica Deviatt, and this is License to Operate a Space Object.
This week on Witness History. In 2011, Japanese tidying expert Marie Kondo released her debut book and became an organizing icon around the world. Her method focuses on only keeping items that spark joy and speak to your heart. Now a best-selling author, award nominee, and household name, she tells us how she's a little more relaxed about tidying since having children. Search and subscribe to Witness History wherever you get your podcasts.
Artificial light upended how we live on Earth. Where once outdoor work, leisure, and mobility were more or less restricted to when there was daylight, the illumination of darkness changed everything. Artificial light is now so ubiquitous that it's polluting our skies. 63% of the world's population live in areas where the night sky is brighter than the threshold for light polluted status set by the International Astronomical Union. A third of the world now cannot see the Milky Way. The city-state of Singapore has one of the world's worst levels of light pollution.
My name is Sarah Ichioka, and I'm in Singapore. Because Singapore is one of the world's most equatorial cities, it's hot. So nighttime is when things really come alive here. Things stay open really late, so that people can enjoy them when it's cooler, and also because people work such long hours here. When I look up at the night sky, I can see a few wispy clouds, but really the lights from the street lamps and the housing estate and the floodlit tennis court of the condo next to me are much, much more dominant. I'm struggling to see any stars. And actually recording this, I have two primary school age children, and I've just realized that I don't think I've ever once looked up at the night sky with them and discussed constellations.
Our evolution as humans is wired to the cycle of day and night. Our biology ticks on a 24-hour basis. Astronomer Radmila Topolovic.
There is an established link. It's scientifically proven. Your circadian rhythms are recalibrated every single day. It's called entrainment by light, so your brain is entrained by light. So waking up in the morning, going outside and having that light will reset all of your biological processes. And it's important that they're all synchronized. Otherwise, you feel fatigued, you feel lethargic, your immune system can't cope. So it's really important. And an important part of that is also the exposure to darkness as well. It kickstarts the production of melatonin. Melatonin is linked to sleep pressure. And all of that is part of your circadian cycle.
Exposing ourselves to artificial light at night disrupts our circadian rhythm and the production of melatonin. And this can have serious health implications. If our natural biological functions are compromised, we're at an increased risk of cancer and cardiovascular disease, diabetes, obesity, and anxiety. There has been a significant impact on the visibility of the night sky for us as a result of our actions. We have changed the night sky, and changed our bodies in the process. And light pollution isn't only affecting humans. It's also affecting the migratory patterns of animals, their reproductive cycles, their breeding habits, and their feeding patterns as well.
Lots and lots of birds migrate, not all of course, but many, many birds do it. And actually, most of the birds that do migrate do it during the night.
Cecilia Nilsson studies bird migration and aeroecology at the University of Lund in Sweden.
Well, there are lots of older studies that show that they do use stars as a compass to find their way. So when the birds are really young in the nest, they learn the rotation of the sky, and it's been shown that they actually use the rotation of the stars around the North Star to be able to identify which way is north.
With our high-rise buildings, windmills, airplanes, and of course, artificial lights, we have extended our activities up into the night sky.
There is some idea that it might be disrupting some of the cues they use. For example, since we know that they use the star compass to navigate, and of course, if you have a lot of artificial light, that gets a lot harder to identify and to see. And the other thing could be this effect of, since we know that it's at least at some scales and at some levels, this light does attract birds. And then the question is, of course, well, what are they being attracted to? They're being attracted then to these kind of urban areas that are maybe not great areas for them to stop over in and forage in and so on. So it might have been much better for them to stop over in a dark forest, but since they're attracted to the bright city glow, instead they're stopping over in a city park or something like that.
Nothing on Earth exists inside a vacuum. Animals have evolved over thousands of years to a specific habitat, and a change in one species' behavior will have knock-on effects.
Birds comprise of billions of individuals across the globe that are making these really long journeys, and of course that's a huge movement of biomass and a huge movement of predators, and because they really connect these different ecosystems, that if you start interrupting that, of course that's going to affect the breeding grounds in northern latitudes and also the stopover sites on the way, and finally the wintering grounds further south.
Sea turtles are considered a keystone species, which means that they play a critical role in the ecosystem.
Rachel Tai works for the Sea Turtle Conservancy. Based in Gainesville, Florida, it's the oldest sea turtle nonprofit in the world.
They have much importance when it comes to managing seagrass, coral reef health, jellyfish population control. Through nesting, they're able to offer nutrients to vegetations on shore.
Sea turtles come ashore to lay their eggs, and the beaches of Florida are a popular nesting ground for them. The state has one of the biggest populations of loggerhead turtles in the world.
Sea turtles typically nest at night, and that has to do with cooler temperatures, not being as visible to predators when they emerge, and that goes for adult females as well as hatchlings when they're emerging from the nest. And they use the celestial light, which is the moonlight, as well as stars reflecting off of the water as a cue on which direction they need to go to find their way back to the ocean. And artificial light can cause confusion because now the brightest horizon isn't the direction of the ocean, but it's landward.
Sea turtles are an ancient creature. They have been around since the age of the dinosaurs. Today, many of their species are now either endangered or threatened. We have created pollution and plastic, and also artificial light. And these lights that illuminate beachfront properties, car headlights, and street lamps all pull turtles towards their glow.
I think the cool thing, not that light pollution is cool, but the hope for the future when it comes to light pollution is that light pollution is manageable and doesn't linger in the environment. If you take action and you begin turning off lights that don't need to be on, removing lights that don't need to be there, light pollution doesn't linger like other pollutants may. You know, plastics in the water, it's harder to move those. But once you turn a light off, the light is off.
My name is Tiina Salonen. I live in Utsjoki, Finland. It's almost 11 p.m. right now. And for the past 2 hours, we've been outside watching the sky, watching the northern lights, watching the stars. There's been lights coming and going, coming and going. It started with smaller streaks. And at some point, we had lights around us, like 360. Every direction we looked, there was northern lights. It's really beautiful. I know that we are privileged to see all these stars and all these beautiful hues and streaks of the lights. We really hope that people understand how important it is to keep the sky black, keep the sky dark. It's not just for the pleasure of viewing the night sky, but also this natural night and natural light is important to us humans, and it's important to animals, it's important to the nature.
The potential loss of the night sky is heartbreaking for our wildlife, our collective health, and our ancient culture and knowledge. And it's also heartbreaking for me personally. When I'm photographing, there's a lot of thought that goes into it. But once the camera's running, I just get to look at the night sky. They're the best moments for me. To be out in the middle of nowhere, on top of a mountain, or on a lakeshore, standing in absolute darkness, alone, my eyes adjusting to starlight. I'm totally at peace and happy. All of who I am, an astrophotographer, a physicist, a pole and aerial athlete, a metalhead, all of that comes together and falls away. I'm both entirely present, and I've also forgotten myself. The majesty of the universe, which only reveals itself to us at night, overtakes everything and encompasses me fully.
I'm back at the car. I'm just loading up my gear. I've got the image that I came out for. It's about 2 a.m. and time to head home.
Without the night sky, I wouldn't know myself. And we wouldn't be who we are without it. Life on Earth wouldn't be the same. You've been listening to The Documentary from the BBC World Service. It was presented by me, Monica Deviat, and the producer was Sasha Edie Lintner.
This week on Witness History. In 2011, Japanese tidying expert Marie Kondo released her debut book and became an organizing icon around the world. Her method focuses on only keeping items that spark joy and speak to your heart. Now a best-selling author, award nominee, and household name, she tells us how she's a little more relaxed about tidying since having children. Search and subscribe to Witness History wherever you get your podcasts.